If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The race to the eight is wide open. The Tigers, out of nowhere, keep their finals chances alive. 10 for Charlie. The Pies do it again. And Ross Lyon's roofgate. Was it a deflection? Welcome to the Footy Podcast. A jam-packed show today. We will be joined by John Ralph to chat Andrew Dillon's impending arrival to the top job, the latest trade news with Glenn McFarlane, and the biggest media street story of the year with Scott Gullen. But first, let's get into it with the chief football writer, Mark Robinson. Robbo, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Good to see you, Will.
Now, you wanted to put on the agenda Lance Franklin. We've just had today Taylor Walker sign a one-year contract. He's 34, 35. We've got Jack Riewoldt playing okay.
How old's Jack? You're doing all my research.
Buddy's 34, 35.
Yep.
Buddy is 37. Where's he at?
If Buddy was 34 years of age and not 37... we would be saying right now, geez, these last months have been fantastic. Okay? So is it an age thing? I got a feeling that 4 or 5 weeks ago, Buddy told friends that this is it. Mm. It's over. I'm retiring. Can't get my body right. It's been fantastic, but this is it. I think in the last month, Franklin's having a rethink about possibilities. Now, Sydney and him are going to have a discussion about it. Sydney might have put a line through him. Might need the cash. They're going after Tom Barras. They might need a lot of things. But they also need good players. And I reckon Buddy in the last 3 weeks, on a different training regime, he's not doing anything during the week. At 36, 37?
Yeah.
He's not doing anything during the week. So, but he's been a naturally fit sort of character all his career, Buddy Franklin. He might be just, you know, play 3 weeks, have a week off, don't train, and just play out. How is Logan McDonald coming along as quick as they hope? He goes okay when Buddy's not around. Amadi, is he ready to take the main? I don't think he is.
Injury prone.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready to take it. And Hayden McLean's a ruckman. He's just a big bomber. He's the one who stands under the big bombs, which Dermot Breton has spoken about several times in recent weeks, once in the Herald Sun about. You know, we're now just playing tall people forward and say, right, be a key forward. The nuances of playing a key forward is not that easy, and certainly Franklin shown over years that he's one of the greatest players that's ever played the game. So as we sit here on Tuesday, I would suggest that Lance Franklin will be keen to play on next year, barring any injury, and he will have to, of course, discuss that with John Longmire and the list management and the executive of the AFL at the Swans.
And last year, he did the same, and you know there was a bit of toing and froing about the contract. And you reported,
there was.
Sydney
absolutely
lowballed him.
He thought they lowballed him. Sydney said they didn't. But anyway, he agreed to play around. Franklin's a really interesting case. He arrived at 17. He's been a player that we all love and support and. That's what he does. He plays football. Mm. I wonder if Buddy has got a post-footy life now. He's a father of two. His wife's an entrepreneur and businesswoman herself, so she's got, you know, that pathway. Mm. I wonder if Buddy's scared of what's next because he's not the first player to get to at the end and say, right, what happens now? I've spoken to many players about when you leave football – that slight anxiety about, right, they've been told for 17, 18 years what to eat, where to go, when to wake up, when to go out and train, when to come back in, go get your rub downs, go do your ice baths, sleep well, do this, do that. And when it's all over, they think, oh, I don't know if Buddy's ready to go into the abyss that we call normal life.
Do you think the lure of a flag that got so close last year, and we've seen obviously this year that they've stumbled a little bit, but improved the last few weeks, do you think that plays a part as well? It has to, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, of course it does. I think every player plays to win. They do. They play and win premierships. Does he believe that they can bounce back? More importantly, the true greats of the game, they'll give it away when their body is knackered. They want to keep playing and show the world that they can still do. And what happens in time, your body reflexes go, et cetera, et cetera. And that was happening with Franklin.
Definitely. At times this year, you thought he was done.
Oh, we all did.
Yeah.
Like, and then we find out after the game, there was that one bad game he got criticised. Then we find out he shouldn't have played. Yeah. There's injuries. Clubs aren't telling us the full story. But I think Franklin has shown enough that he's considering it. Does John Longmire believe they are a better chance at running a reasonable premiership campaign next year with Franklin of there or without Franklin?
That's
Are they ready to flip the page and go full time with, you know, Logan McDonald?
And we'll find out.
Or, do you know, a long time ago, Kevin Sheedy said once, he said, we've got to sign players to 15 game contracts. It was like 25 years ago he said that.
Yeah.
Everyone said, that's crazy. But right now, you know, we're resting more and more players.
Yep.
Why can't Franklin re-sign, reduce money, play 15, 16 games?
Geelong have done that well this year.
Yeah, they have. Geelong are probably the league leaders in looking after their players. So something to ponder. And the other fellow, Jack Rewald, who you mentioned there, buddy, what's he, 34, Jack?
He'll be 35 next year.
He's on Fox. Spoke briefly to her about him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the possibility. They want to play on, but it's not entirely their decision.
No, it isn't.
And you look at Jack Rewald's situation. Jack's had to carry a forward line this year without Tom Lynch. He gets double teamed. Everyone knows the ball's going to Jack. So Jack often fights 1v2. And when you're 30, footy's hard enough to play other than being 35 and fighting against two players every bloody contest you go up. So I think Jack's been really stoic and a really team-first player and brings the ball to the ground, et cetera, et cetera. Would he thrive with Tom Lynch? Would he thrive even more individually if Tom Lynch was there?
You'd think so.
Because he's a smart player. So all about his body. We'll know more. I wouldn't be surprised if Jack wants to play on. I'm probably not as confident on Trent Cotchin, but I'm not telling a three-time premiership captain whether he should retire or not. I don't think that's our business. Mike Sheehan once wrote that Stephen Kernahan should retire.
How did that go down?
No, not real well. I don't know if Mick Sheehan listens to his podcast, but I can remember the Stephen Kernahan gave him a ring. And basically words to the effect, who are you to tell me when?
Did he retire that year?
Retire. Yeah, I can't remember.
That is funny.
It always happens, though. I think people get the right to not be told they should be retired. And I think Buddy's in that. Jack's in that. Jack will have to sit down with the club and say, right, what do we all think? What do we all think? If they say to Jack, we really need you, guess what? Jack's going around again.
Robbo, it's a watch this space on both fronts. Thank you.
No worries, Will.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast A Life in Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
Evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're joined by John Ralph. Ralphie, how are you going?
Fantastic. How much do you earn, Will?
That's a private question, but clearly not as much as Andrew Dillon.
Yes.
Is that the segue you're going for?
I'm always going for segues. Yeah, we wrote about the 17 things that Andrew Dillon can change, and number 17 is making the AFL chief executives pay public again.
And why do you think that that should be a thing?
Well, I think it's an important comparison point with the AFL players. So if Gil McLachlan's on $3.5 million and the highest paid player is on 1.2, I think that shows how significantly out of kilter it is. It's also, this is an AFL organisation that doesn't pay tax.
Mm.
So, you know, I think the transparency, it's an important signal out there that, you know, we're not the kind of organisation that shoves things under the carpet, even though we would suggest with most of their investigations that's exactly what happens. But I just think it's a really important symbolic thing. So, yeah.
And Andrew Demetrio did that when he left?
Yeah, and Andrew Demetrio, as he told Sam Landsberger a couple of weeks back, he said, we think that the AFL chief executive's wage should be made public. So it's a call for the AFL commission, the remuneration tribunal.
Yeah.
They're the ones that set the wage. You know, Richard Goyder has made clear that he thinks that for whatever reason it is, it should be secret. I just think that from the top down is just a really bad example. So, yeah, there's some really important things that Dills can change. There's some really small things that matter as well, like start times for Friday night games.
They're small, but they're passionate things that people care about.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting thing as well. So the AFL fans organisation, they met with Dills a couple of weeks back. The AFL Dills has, you know, used this time really constructively, spoken to the broadcasters, spoken to the clubs, but also people like the fans organisation. Now, you know, whatever you think of them, it just shows that he's interested in just, you know, the micro and the macro. So, I mean, he's got to force that change through because Channel 7 wants to have, you know, a 750 game, which allows them to stream, what do you call it, strip across all of the states, you know, Better Homes and Gardens, and then have their 20 minutes. But I think if your Dills, you just say tough. We declare the starting times. We declare when we start our games and our fixture, and it's going to be a 7:20 game. You're a young bloke. You'd be sort of, you know, 12 cans, couple of sort of white claws, get to the end of the game. But someone like me at 44, if I wasn't working for Fox Footy, I'd have a couple of shandies and I'd watch the first half. And if it's what time's by then, 9:20, if the game's not tight, I'd just go to bed. So I think it's a ratings winner for Channel 7 as well, even if they have to force it through.
Was it written in next year's deal?
No.
That was talked about though, wasn't it? Was it at one stage it was a chance?
Yeah, well, now the AFL, as they have said, we are in control of the fixture. So they're in control of the grand final start time. So, you know, as I said in there, okay, let's call it halftime. So how long is halftime, do you know?
It's 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I had to look it up. So I thought it was maybe 17 minutes.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's give them another minute and a half across the quarters on Friday night footy. Let's make it a 25-minute. You've got two big, you know, 2.5-minute ad blocks. No one's going to care. No one's even going to realise. So you might have to give somebody to get something better. I think that, you know, that's not as personal to him as the salary, but you talk to every fan out there, it's important for them that, you know, they want to have a start time at 7:20.
And the CEOs met last week with Andrew Dillon and we sort of spoke a little bit about, you know, the different ideas that were floated. Do you see Andrew Dillon coming in and making wholesale changes to draft, pick purchasing, mid-season trade, things that you've talked about in your Wreck-It-Roll column today, or will it be, you know, over a few years?
Yeah, he's slow and steady. You know, he's details-oriented. He's really keen on the unintended consequences. So we'll be bringing a mid-season trade period. Doesn't mean that North Melbourne, in their current situation, we get rid of Todd Goldstein for pick 30. We get rid of, I'm trying to think, they haven't really got a lot of, you know, collateral there. But they consider an offer for Cam Zerha if Collingwood, you know, loses Jamie Elliott.
Ben McKay, for example.
Ben McKay. Yeah, absolutely. So Ben McKay is going like a busted.
Yep.
But they do need him. So, you know, Ben McKay, even though, you know, that ties into the free agency discussion. But, you know, someone says, no, we'll give up a first rounder for Ben McKay.
Exactly, yeah.
Give up pick 12. So I think I still am a bit weird on, okay, if someone wins a premiership, having secured two players late in the season. But the opposing argument is that you would hope that the, you know, their rival club in the grand final has done the same thing. We saw Marlon Pickett in the mid-season draft. So, you know, those things he's working through the unintended consequences of. But there are things like, you know, free agency compensation. Why is that secret?
Mm.
We sort of half know already. We know, it's you know, the top 5% of all, you know, players over $800,000. We know that there is the vague compensation formula. There's things like that he could change in a heartbeat. Just make free agency compensation public, change it overnight, and clubs can then work within those parameters.
When do you think he takes charge?
I think the CBA could be done as early as next Friday, which is a, you know, really rapidly escalated schedule. So Travis Old has a couple of key meetings with the AFLPA over the next week. He leaves next Friday. His due date is August 4. He starts late August with the Grand Prix Corporation. Gil McLaughlin's back from Israel.
Yep.
So this could get done in a series of meetings really quickly. Now, if it's not done, most of that heavy lifting could be done with a series of compromises. So that means for Gil McLaughlin, whose handover date is still the day after the Grand Final, he's not a lame duck, but what's he doing? He's done the Tassie stuff. They can work out as a state whether they want that team. He's done the Hawthorn investigation. A lot of us would say that's a convenient outcome. But does he have a series of long lunches across September? So the things that titillate me are not the CBA, which are very important but boring.
Yep.
Does he read out the Brownlow Medal votes?
It's what everyone will be asking.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. There'll be a lot of people out there who don't know who Andrew Dillon is.
Yes.
And maybe this is, as you say, the occasion to show the whole world,
yes,
well, the Australia, the only watcher, the Brownlow, who Andrew Dillon is. Yes. I think it's a good idea.
Well, he's obviously very good at it because he called that VFA game, didn't he, a couple of weeks back?
Yes.
Which we live streamed. So that might have been his warm up.
Special comments, Chair.
Yeah, so again, this is symbolic.
Yeah.
So Gil McLaughlin's had his victory lap. He's danced with Delta, did a very good job of it. He's done the September Club. He's had his lunches post-COVID. He's done all that stuff. If I was him, I'd be thinking, I wouldn't mind doing that again. I wouldn't mind another month of salary. What would his salary be? Let's call it 1.6 million, you know, 150 grand for that. But if he says he's such a great friend to Andrew Dillon, and if he's got that stuff done, you move on and you allow Andrew Dillon all the things like the grand final parade, like the grand final, like the Brownlow voting. They're important. It shows that he's the boss. I thought that, you know, again, symbolically. So Gil McLaughlin presents the game ball to Scott Pendlebury, you know, games possessions, record possessions. He's there with Jeff Brown. There's a nice photo there with Andrew Dillon. The four of them are in that photo. We crop him out, Andrew Dillon.
You're kidding.
He got cropped out. It was only the three of them.
Didn't fit the 16-9
requirements. No, didn't fit the ratio.
Wow.
So just those little things. So I think for Gil McLaughlin, it would be a big, again, symbolic thing to say, no, I'm off on September 1. I might still pay him for the month of October.
Yeah.
Payroll might still get organised.
Bit of back pay, yeah.
Exactly. But it allows Andrew to be the boss and to make the changes he needs from September 1.
And he is lucky, Andrew Dillon, because I don't think off the top of my head there's any, you know, tongue twisters for the Brownlow like Carmichael Hunt or Robin Nahas. Obviously, Gil made that his own, but it would be good to see who Dillon wants, you know.
And Dacos. So who starts with an N with Collingwood? I'm trying to think to go, you
Nathan
know.
Murphy, but
he's
probably
Murphy,
not troubling the scorers. But I think you're right. It would be good to see his take on things, and maybe September is the way to do that.
Yeah, so all that stuff, again, is quite arcane, but it matters. And again, the other thing, just to leave you with, fix the bloody mark and goal of the year. It's insane. I couldn't even find out what the prize was for the person who wins the mark and goal of the year.
Yeah, I think we just think it's a car, but I don't
know. No, I think it might be like 12 months use of a Kluger, you know, some money to your junior team. You know, you look on the website, the AFL, it's all about fan voting.
Yeah.
$5,000, $4,000 of cash and $1,000 of a Rebel voucher. It's not what it should be.
Should be a proper award.
So kudos to Channel 9. They've gone and hooked up a Lexus for their MVP, whatever they call it. If Nick Dacos can win $100,000 car, surely the AFL, with their billion sponsors, can actually stump up a car for the mark of the year and the goal of the year.
I like it. Ralphie, thanks for setting the agenda once again.
Thank you very much.
It's time to talk trade with Glenn McFarlane. Macca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Will. This is not trade. Tom Brown, who's replacing Tom Brown? I thought you might have been in the mix there.
We'll get to that with Scotty Gallen a bit later on in the piece. Are you a chance to jump ship to Channel 7?
No, I'm a Herald Sun employee, have been for a long time now. I'll still be here.
I'd like to see you do a live cross.
Oh, easy, easy.
I reckon you'd absolutely nail it.
No problems. Which ground would you like me out on, a cold, wintry sort of?
Yeah, I reckon in front of Cadinia Park a Thursday night just before a 7:20 game.
Yeah, bring it on. Bring it on.
Wind, cold, interviewing, you know, an Andrew Mackey or something like that.
Yeah,
I can
Andrew
really
Mackey,
see
he's all right.
It.
He's always a bit of humour with Andrew Mackey. I like that. He's a man. We're talking about list strategies.
Yeah, and he's a list manager.
Very much involved in that space.
Now, one club I really want to get to, you talked to Graham Wright before the start of the season. Mm-hmm. He put on the agenda that the Pies are going to be active once again. We know they were last year. Mm. McStay, Mitchell, Bobby Hill. That was the crack.
They had a crack, yeah.
Now, it looks like they're going to do it again, and they've re-signed players as well. Where's Collingwood at from a list management point of view?
I think they're in a really good position, and Graham Wright obviously wasn't in charge when the things blew up at the end of 2020, and I think I think back then you look at it and you think, oh, how did they get this so badly wrong? Yeah. But they've been able to turn it around. I think there were roughly 25 pies out of contract when we spoke to Graham Wright,
yep,
heading in towards next year. And they're down to about 11, I think. So what they've been able to do is lock away, you know, people like Mason Cox and, yep, Ash Johnson's an interesting one because there was a lot of interest from rival clubs, yeah, with Ash Johnson. And you've seen that he's sort of been in and out of the team. At his best, he's in that team, but there's a strong, you know, level of competition for those key forwards. Bo McCreary signed again. John Noble hasn't missed a game since he's been drafted, since he was, you know, mid-season drafted.
Amazing story.
It's an incredible story. So they've been able to keep these guys there. Yeah. Harvey Harrison's another one. So there's a few. The Finn McRae's the interesting one,
yeah,
because as we wrote in Moneyball last week, the clubs are coming for him. So Pies want to keep him, but there is a lot of interest there. They're going to be active at the end of this year, Collingwood, maybe in a different sense to the, yeah, way they were last year. But I expect that in the next 12 to 18 months, that's when they'll be looking for the big hit,
yeah,
because the money in the salary cap is now starting to even out beautifully.
And obviously our esteemed colleague,
yep,
Jay Clark, put Ben King on the agenda.
He did.
But what else do you think Collingwood needs from a list manager?
It's an interesting one. I think, you know, a key defender would help, but a, yeah, key forward would absolutely help. That's been an area that Collingwood's really struggled with for a long time. They're paying Dan McStay some pretty good money. He's not that key power forward that, you know, essentially you'd love to have in your sort of mix. You know, Harry Himmelberg's the interesting one, because it looks like he may end up staying at the Giants. There'd been a fair bit of interest from Collingwood and Essendon, more particularly Sydney, you know, but Lachlan McCurdy sort of suggesting that and having a good chat to Harry that he's more likely to stay.
Yeah, were that the strongest comments you've seen from
him? Yeah, I think they were the strongest comments I'd seen so far. I think there'd been a shift in recent. It's funny how it moves. Like, yeah, in Moneyball we wrote, I think, probably about 4 months ago that Tom De Koning would end up signing a 2-year bridging sort of contract, yeah, to stay at Carlton. I think we got poo-pooed by everyone. And that's the way that's looking now after swinging around really in a big way. And similar with Harry Himmelberg, I think most people thought he would leave. But at this stage and what the Giants are building, you can see why he would want to stay.
Explain us that bridging contract in North Melbourne. Yeah. Sort of a team at the moment that are looking at that. What is that?
Well, there's two forms.
Called?
Yeah, there's two forms of bridging contract. There's the bridging contract if you're the player and it's in your view and you're Tom De Koning and you think I'm going to be a much better player in 2 years' time. So, yep, my salary is going to skyrocket in 2 years. So I'll stick around at a club for a couple of years. And then, and we saw it with Jordan Ngoi a few years ago, and Darcy Moore did the same thing. In the end, they stayed, but they kept the door ajar. With the clubs, the bridging contract's different. Like, North are about to lose 10 players at the end of this year, maybe more.
With a lot of experience.
Absolutely. So they're going to lose Zeeble, Cunnington, maybe Goldstein at this stage, yep, Aaron Hall, you know, Kane Turner.
Yep.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Liam Shields will probably go, Daniel Howe. So there's a lot of experience going out. So North can't have all kids coming in.
Yep.
So you've got to have some senior players. So the club bridging contract is much more to do with going out and recruiting some of the players that are sort of fringe players around some of the AFL clubs. You look at an Adam Tomlinson, yep, or a Caleb Marchbank. So already, you know, even like a Paddy Dow or something in that regard as well. So,
sort of trying to take another club's trash and make it your
correct
treasure.
Correct, and make it a treasure. And
a
it's
little
happened.
Bit Moneyball the movie style.
Well, that is the Moneyball movie style as opposed to Moneyball the column style. So that's an area that North's looking heavily at now. They're obviously in trying to get some high-end contracts as well, but they need that bridging. So there's two forms of bridging contract, the player bridging, yep, contract and the club one. North's heavily involved in the club one. I think you'll find that they'll be incredibly active in the off-season in picking up some contracted and maybe not some contracted players going forward.
Yeah, so we've got the Pies, North. We think they'll, you know, yep, they'll be some of the bigger movers. Now, one player that really fascinates me is Tom Barrass.
Yeah.
I think he's probably the best player up for grabs this year. Do you see him leaving West Coast?
I think you're right. I think he will leave West Coast. I think West Coast almost need him to leave. I saw what Robbo wrote about Oscar Allen last week. He's the one that you'd really want to get out of West Coast if you can. How can you have a guy who kicks 41 goals to this point of the season in such a garbage team? I think they've kicked 143. And he's playing in defence last weekend. And you think, oh, you must be getting frustrated. But I think the Eagles will be loath to let him go under any,
yeah,
way, shape or form. He's a potential captain going forward. But Barrass is at that awkward age in the sense that by moving him on, he's not going to be a part of a West Coast premiership.
No.
So Sydney, we know that Sydney are a bit cashed up. They lose, you know, obviously the buddy contract this year is not as much as it's been in previous years.
And they need a key defender.
They need a key defender. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with Paddy McCartan. That's still something that'll be solved down the track, or he, you know, may walk away from the game. It's that's something to be determined. So Tom Barras is the, you know, is one of their number one priorities. Now I think he'll end up at Sydney, and I think West Coast will be like, you know what, we need to get some quality kids through the, you know, through the system. So they need to move some senior players on. And you look at them next year. You look, you know, Luke Shuey may have played his last game. Yep. Shannon Hearn, you know, won't go on next year. What's going on with Nick Nat? They've got so many list management issues there.
It's a debacle.
That is a debacle. And that's why I think it's time for them to move someone on, and Tom Barras could be that person.
Macca, thank you as always.
Pleasure.
See you next time.
Thanks. Good on you, Will.
This is Brownies Podcast.
G'day, it's Jonathan Brown, the host of Brownies Podcast. Along with my boys Dino and Campbell Brown, we give you the world's loosest podcast.
How did you get locked up again?
I was set up by the Queensland coppers.
This Bazball has been crazy.
What
yeah,
the
f***? That Bazball.
Twiggy cash.
Rubber bullets next time we go to war. God forbid someone gets hurt.
Oh, there it is.
Ask your smart speaker to play Brownies Podcast or search for Brownies Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
It's time to take a walk down Media Street with Scott Gullen. Scott.
Will.
How are you going?
Very well. I've got black armbands on, actually. It's a sad day. Sad day for Media Street. I've lost one of my main men, Golden Goose.
It is. Look, and I'm glad you've gone straight there because Media Street was created a year ago and this...
Who's claiming the creation of this column?
As the sole creator of the column, and I'm not going to say it was a scalp, but this is the biggest breaking news I think the column has produced. Do you agree?
It was big. Tom Brown, obviously, one of the best newsbreakers, Channel 7's chief football reporter.
Yep.
Has sensationally quit. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the traction Tom has out there with our readers is big.
He's
a big personality. He's well known. And no one saw this coming. And it's shocked everyone.
Now, I think everyone wants to know, but why?
I think there's family issues. He's just had his second child in March. His wife's from Sydney.
Yep.
The family, her parents are up there. So... And also, I think he's a bit, not burnt out's probably wrong, but it is a very tough gig what he's done. He's done 12 years at 7, high pressure, you know, chasing players in and out of scanning. Like, I get it. I think it's sort of, and yeah, he has brought a lot of scrutiny on himself as well. So I think he's just taking a bit of a breath and maybe, you know, looking after his family first.
And he's going to Sydney. Now, we do have to address, I think this would be, you know... irresponsible as if we didn't, but he has now got a job at MA Financial Group, which is the old Moelis group. Is that right, Scott? And which Andrew Pridham,
Sydney chairman, runs.
Is involved in, but obviously Jeff Brown, Tom's dad, is the non-executive director, so we're just putting that on the cards. But
absolutely.
There was a lot of feedback that, you know, he's getting a job with his dad's company.
You've
spoken to Tom. Where does that sit?
He has a good relation with Pridham. His CV's pretty good. He's a lawyer. Before he went into media, he's got a finance background. He studied that as well. So I think Tom can get his own jobs, but it's just the link that's there.
And do you think this is the end of football journalism for Tom?
No. I think I'm as shocked as everyone else who'll be listening to this. I mean, he's such a good operator. Moving to Sydney, like, as he was on Triple M as well. And knowing him, and we all see how proficient on Twitter and other things are, I can imagine he'll get the itch pretty quickly. Maybe not quite Damien Hardwick quick, but I would think maybe next year he might have a less stressful gig. I don't think we've seen the end of Tom Brown.
Wow. Maybe that's just the bigger bombshell that you've just dropped.
Well, out. I don't know. I mean, I hope he goes and has a good time with his family and has a bit of a breather. But, yeah, I think... knowing his personality, I think he'd be back in some form.
Now, we do move quickly onto the replacements.
We very do.
And clearly, as you pointed out in today's Herald Sun, Mitch Cleary looks like the $1 favourite, if not even money, to replace him as the chief football reporter.
Channel 7 in a great spot. I mean, Tom Brown v Mitch Cleary has been part of the fun to watch over the last couple of years. I mean, they've... as good as each other at newsbreaking, they've been going head-to-head in their own newsroom, which, as we know in here, that's often a very good thing. So Mitchell step up. It's just who comes with him because you need an offsider who's pretty good at the gig as well.
And they've done that in the past. You know, Tom Brown and Steve over there together before Tom Brown and Mitch Cleary. So you do like to have the two. And I think in past years, Craig Hutchison and Anthony Mithen.
He's there's always been two helps the whole dance. So who they get is going to be the watch this space.
And the few names you did throw up today, the likes of Tom Morris, Sam Edmund, Xander Maguire, I think pricked a few ears.
He's an interesting one. He's, for those who don't know, he's been doing some part-time work at Channel 9.
Part-time?
Yeah, he's not full-time.
Wow, okay.
I think he's, well, he's been over in Europe for a little rest, and I think he's still doing a bit of uni. But he's highly talented, and often, like, this is interesting, Tom's dad ran Channel 9, and then he got a job at 7, which was a smart move. And people are saying, I agree, Xander gets out of his dad's shadow, even though Eddie's not at 9. He is a 9 figure, has been forever. He goes to 7 and builds his own profile. It's not a bad move. And look, if you're Channel 7, you're looking at it and go, he's a good name, he's a good kid, he'll cost less than a few others because he's young. I wouldn't mind him. But, I mean, Tom Morris, obviously, he served his time. He's back in the media doing SEN, a great operator. We saw what he did with Damien Hardwick. He's got the TV experience. He would be pretty close to the top of the list. Sammy Edmund, like, we created him here. He's a good operator. Then you got, like, Josh Gablich, a few others. Or they could go into state. Ryan Daniels, they've looked at before. He's in WA.
Josh so, and Sarah Ollie at AFL.com.au.
Yeah, there's a few in there. It'll be interesting to see. They probably don't have to replace him till maybe the start of next season. So they
might stay on Tom.
He does the finals, and then he goes. But then, yeah, you probably don't need him over summer. It's more an AFL role than
it's usually a one story a day, I think,
yeah, in summer. So you think Mitch shows, would cover the trade and all that, and I reckon by March next year, someone will appear.
Are you a chance, given you're very good at RSN, and I think I've seen a few TikTok videos of you, offered, so on-camera presentation is okay.
Okay.
Just okay. They'd probably have to fix a few things up, but you're probably going to
we'll cut
slow
that out
burner.
Because I've been offered gigs in the past and thought I'd allow others to have that, like yourself, who's made for TV. You should look at this gig, I think.
Yeah, maybe. But the thing is, it means I wouldn't be able to do this with you.
That is career highlight so far.
So that's things you got to consider. So just quickly, as always, we say, do you have anything for tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I know you've done your first thing, but
I think this week's Media Street went on Monday, and I need a freshen up.
We might have to speak about that offline. Scott, thank you.
Pleasure, Will.
Well, that'll probably do it for today's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Will Hogan, and thanks to our guests, Mark Robinson, John Ralph, Glenn McFarlane, and Scott Gullen. Head to the Herald Sun website for our latest footy coverage. We have Mick McGuan's column at 12 p.m. on Thursday, as well as Jay Clark's Cap Space Thursday morning, before all the latest footy coverage throughout the weekend and Mark Robinson's Tackle, 6 p.m. Sunday night. See you next week.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.